You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Yep, let's go. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, 710 Sports app. What's up? Friday morning.
He's like a carnival barker.
Let's go. Hello. I'm in a good mood today. Feeling great. I felt maybe it's a Friday. Maybe it's the weather. I don't know. I felt like maybe I was a little cranky yesterday. And so trying to bounce back. Justin sent me some videos. He's like, I looked hard for something from the show and I couldn't find anything good. So here's the best I could come up with.
That was not what he said.
Well, that's how I took it. And which maybe it was how I was feeling about the show yesterday. Like, yeah, I was a little cranky. Didn't bring the fun energy that I wanted to. So it
wasn't bad.
Tried to get it back today. It was warm. I saw the sun yesterday, which I think filled me with a level of joy. Feeling good today. Excited about the new, even better wild card weekend that we're going to get. I watched some golf yesterday, which was awesome. I watched the Kraken yesterday, which was not
awesome.
That's now 11 of 12 games they've managed to drop. They're going to have to figure something out. I don't know. Again, was saying it yesterday, like what's the breaking point there before the organization needs to act in some way, whether it's with, you know, trades or something, coaching. Like at some point you can't just allow yourself to keep losing game after game after game without taking some level of action. So we'll see where they end up. I was watching golf yesterday, as I like to do in the afternoons. And since they're in Hawaii, it's on like a little bit later in the day. So it actually kind of bled almost into prime time here. So I was watching golf, getting ready for dinner last night, watching Kevin Na, Jim Furyk doing it at Wailea and Oahu, which was just beautiful. Anyway, what was interesting to me about those two guys is that, well, first of all, Jim Furyk's on the Champions Tour now. I mean, like he's old enough to be playing most of his golf on the Champions Tour. And, you know, he shot a 62 yesterday on the regular tour, was in the lead. I think eventually Na ended up passing him at the end. But, you know, that's ridiculous, right? And those two guys, neither of them hits it very far. They're not the longest hitters on tour, or even close to it, but they've got the kind of short game stuff. Now, look, I don't want to get too deep into Kevin Na or Jim Furyk, but what stood out to me is in an era in which there's less and less variety in sports, those two guys brought a completely different game plan than what is the norm right now in golf, right? What's hot in golf right now? Hit the ball
smashing
as far as you possibly can. And if you're offline, so what? You're so strong that you can hit the ball out of the rough and you're not that far from the hole because you've hit it 80 or whatever.
But that's not like it's a trend right now that's going to go away. Guys are just getting bigger and stronger and clubs are getting better. And
all
right?
of that is true, but the strategy has changed too.
Okay.
Right? It used to be like, well, you don't want to hit it 100% because you want to make sure you're in the fairway. So if you can hit the ball 350, well, maybe you want to keep it 320 because you want to be in the fairway and that's the advantage. And that's gone away for the most part, right? They're trending towards this thing where more and more guys just hit the ever-living you-know-what out of the ball and then kind of figure it out from there. And it just kind of got me thinking about variety in sports, which is something we're missing. I mean, I was thinking about it as it comes to golf, but I think you could apply that thought to almost every sport out there. There seems to be a movement towards less variety. Right.
You mean less ways to do the same thing? Is that what you're
saying? Yes, fewer ways to do the same thing. So let's look at football. And to me, this is where it's become most interesting here in Seattle. No one wants to let Pete Carroll do it his way because it's not the new popular way. And they want every single team to do it the same way. You've got to do it with offense. You got to do it with passing. You got to do it with this kind of creativity. I don't want that. I like that, and maybe this is me starting to get old and missing some of the parts of my youth, but I think one of the things that makes sports great, or in certainly in football's case, I love that, okay, this team is a power running team, and they want to run the ball 500 times a game, and this team over here wants to spread you out and run the run and shoot, and this team over here wants to, like, I love the variety and trying to figure out, you know, styles makes fights, right? Isn't the old boxing analogy, a boxing phrase, styles make fights? I love having different styles. I don't know if that's changed in boxing and now everybody's got the same style there. Like, well, Mayweather did it. Better do it like him. Oh, never punch and just dodge. I don't watch enough boxing anymore to know.
Prince Nassim Hamed.
Right. I mean, this started to happen in tennis. Right, is one of the reasons I don't follow tennis the way I once did when I was a kid. Some of it is that the Americans aren't very good at it anymore. Some of it is that it's jokers like Djokovic right now, who just got banned from Australia the second time, and so he's not going to have an opportunity to win a 21st Grand Slam down at the Australian Open. But it used to be that it was like, okay, this guy's a backcourt, you know, a serve and volley guy, and this guy plays at the baseline, and this person's better on clay, and this person's better on grass. And so, you know, when McEnroe would go up against Connors, there was an element of completely different styles that was great. You still get some of that, right? I mean, obviously Nadal is a great clay court player, and Federer and Djokovic and those guys were better on hard courts and stuff, but it just feels like so much of the style has become one. Like, we figured out the best way to play this sport, and now everybody's going to do it. It's definitely true in baseball, right? Well, you can't bunt anymore. And I understand, like, they've figured out the best way to win games is to not do that anymore. Statistically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But it was cool when you had, like, you know, the Kansas City Royals from the 80s doing their thing where they ran 1,000 times. And then another team was trying to hit a bunch of home runs. And it's been true, it feels like, it's happening in basketball, right? Well, you got to hit three-pointers, and you got to, you know, it's either dunks or three-pointers. Dunks or three-pointers. That's the way to win in basketball. And, well, forget about a Shaquille O'Neal. Forget about a guy. Like, I don't know. Styles should make fights. And so of all the changes in sports in my lifetime, to me, it's probably the one that has ended up bothering me the most. And I don't know whether it's because of the statistical revolution, which I'm sure is part of it, or just the copycat leagues that are out there. But I do think it takes some fun away from what we see. The other thing it made me wonder, do you think that we're getting too good at the sports that we have?
Define we are getting too good at
the sports. Not you and me.
It's like, you mean... Like,
yes, I'm too good at golf and we're going to have to shut it down.
Well, I think this goes back to what I just said about golf. Like, the players are getting so big and so strong,
right,
that the game is drastically changed. That's why you can't compare anybody from any era anymore, because everything's so different.
Do you think we've mastered these sports to a degree that we weren't necessarily supposed to, because of not just all the size and strength for sure, but also the amount of thought that has gone into them for so long?
Sure.
Do you think that we've gotten too good at it and figured out the exact right way to play the game, or maybe we're heading towards that direction to the point where maybe we need new sports?
Interesting. Or maybe you just finally start paying attention to different sports.
Maybe.
It's not new sports.
Well, all right. Yeah, it's different sports. Obviously, there's other things out there. But, like, there's been so much time, energy, and resources spent trying to figure out baseball, right? Trying to figure out the absolute best way to quantify a player, how to get the best results. Now you're dealing with spin rate and launch angles. I mean, you're getting it down to a 1 degree launch angle change and trying to perfect your swing to that extent. Have we gotten too good at it? Like, is that one of the reasons people have turned towards, you know, whether it's watching cornhole on TV or just something simple, just to take some of the exactness out of the game? I don't know. I don't know whether that's the case, and I certainly don't see us getting rid of football or baseball anytime soon, although baseball seems to be attempting to get rid of itself. You know, I don't think we're going to do that. But there are times where I wonder if we've just gotten so good at the sports that we've put the time and energy into that, you know, that's going to be it.
Yeah, cornhole is a little bit more relatable for me
than is it?
Watching baseball, where I'm like, I could never have even come close to, like, I don't say I'm playing at a high level, but none of this doesn't even look like the same sport to me anymore from what I played. But the funny thing is, when you hear something going wrong, it always comes back to, well, let's just get back to basics. It's like, yeah, but your basics started at level 10. I'm
exactly.
Not even at 4.
I don't know, what's the game they play with the four people standing around the little circle and you hit the ball into
spike ball. Yeah.
Do you think that there'll be eventually like an analytical spike ball?
I'm sure there will.
And you figure out the exact right angle to spike it and who you should be picking on and when you should go to where? I don't know.
There's spike ball tournaments in Venice all the time.
Then I'm sure eventually, so if there's enough money in it, somebody will start putting more resources into it, and I'm sure they'll figure it out. All right, just my quick rant for the morning. I promise I am in a great mood today. I'm feeling good. I'm excited about even better wild card weekend. We got more. The meeting, I think, is still going on. Pete and Russ and Jody, or I guess Russ isn't there. Maybe Mark Rogers is there. Who knows? Maybe they're inviting new people into
the
meeting.
I feel like it'll be like when we get they sequester themselves and, yes. and nominate a new pope, and yes. then the smoke comes out.
The cardinals are all together.
There'll be an announcement like, John Schneider is now fully in charge of personnel.
That may happen. Who knows? Yesterday we didn't hear a darn thing. So
releasing pigeons.
We're up to our own devices to try to figure out what the heck's going on in that meeting room. So we'll tell you what we believe is happening, and we'll do it all next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
A little Black Sabbath to get you going on a Friday morning. Old school Black Sabbath, too. I love it. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN, Seattle. Just want to clarify on the whole we're getting too good at sports thing and everybody, not enough variety. It did come out of something that I saw that was good, right? Like, I liked that we did get to see some variety, and maybe that gives me some hope that the little guys will succeed in golf, and maybe somebody will bunt in baseball this year. Who knows? In the meantime, it's time to tell you everything you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
If Jody Allen met with the top Seahawks brain trust yesterday as expected, we sure haven't heard anything come from it. Despite plenty of speculation, it could lead to changes in the structure of how personnel decisions get made or assistant coaching moves. Nothing leaked to the media, at least as of yet. Personally, I'd be in favor of some movement on the coaching staff, but the realignment of structure, I tell you, it still just makes me a little bit queasy. Yes, I want Pete Carroll to focus on what he does best. I've been saying, do your job for quite some time now regarding the Seahawks. But I don't know whether an official change is the best way to make that happen, especially without triggering some unintended consequences. Around the league, Houston Texans officially made David Culley their scapegoat yesterday, firing him after just one season at the helm. Was the team good? No. Was it his fault? Sure didn't seem to be. They finished 4-13 without Deshaun Watson, with a rookie quarterback who at least seemed to develop and get better as the season went on. Even worse for Culley. This always seemed to be the plan, as he only received 2 years of guaranteed money in his deal. Even more disturbing, two of the three black head coaches in the league were fired this week, and of all the firings, they were the two that were the most surprising. Perhaps one or both of them will get another job in a better situation, but honestly, this pattern sure seems to play out over and over again in the NFL. Get ready for the first ever supersized, flavor-blasted, even wilder wildcard weekend. That's right, the NFL's finally embraced my daughter's philosophy of more is more. They've added two more games and one more day to the opening round of the playoffs. I'll go with Vegas and New England as my upset picks, and the other higher seeds advance.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Speaking of more playoff teams, I do think the news was actually okay coming out of the first baseball labor negotiation session yesterday. Did it lead to an agreement? Of course not. But at the very least, I thought the league brought a real proposal that addresses some of the players' concerns. It can be a starting point for a real negotiation and conversation. Without getting too deep into the details, the league proposal dealt with service time manipulation by offering a possible end to the Super 2 system, which allows certain players to get to arbitration a year early. Also offered draft pick compensation as a reward for teams to take their best players on the major league roster to start the year. The union, of course, balked, and many have said the proposals don't go far enough, and I don't disagree with that. I think that's right. But I am mildly encouraged by the fact that they at least engaged in substantive discussions about these core issues at all. I don't know how this thing ends, but at some point they're going to have to negotiate through when players can become free agents, when the luxury tax looks like, and a host of other issues related to when players get paid and how to improve the balance of the game. So no real news yet. But at least I thought some reason for hope. Time is certainly running out, as Jeff Passan mentioned this week to Pat McAfee.
I'm not at the point right now where I'm panicking that there are going to be games lost. But once we get to February 1st, if there's not progress, Pat, then that we're looking at spring training being postponed.
Yeah, you're looking at about 2 more weeks for this group to get their butts in gear.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Okay, stop me if you've heard this one before. The Kraken did some nice things, showed some signs of life, and ultimately couldn't put together a complete 60 minutes of hockey and took another loss. This time it was the third period instead of the first that did them in. They took a 1-0 lead into the final 20 minutes, only to give up 2 more goals and never recover. 2-1 the final from St. Louis, and it is now 11 losses in 12 games. You certainly couldn't pin this one on the goaltending. I thought Chris Drieger was magnificent yesterday. Jumps off the page in a way that Grubauer does not. Maybe Grubauer is a better positional goalie, but man, You watch Driedger, he just shows off his athleticism. He's so active in the crease. I'd like to see more of him and find out what he looks like, if he could actually get himself into a rhythm. At this point, I don't know what the downside would possibly be. Congratulations to Jordan Eberle. He's the lone representative to the All-Star Game in Vegas, the winger named to the team for the second time in his career, first time in 10 seasons. He's also been their best and, I believe, most consistent player this year. What happened to the Warriors last night? They got blown out by Milwaukee. Giannis doing his thing, a triple-double there. Upset in New Jersey as well as the Thunder dominate the Nets. Nuggets over the Blazers, and Memphis beats Minnesota. All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know, including the fact that Memphis beat Minnesota. I'm sure that was one of the things that you had on your mind. You're wondering, what was the outcome of that game last night?
You could go on with the rest of your day now.
I've got you covered. God, you watch. I don't know if you watched the game last night.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Driedger's a better goalie than Grubauer. I'm not sure I fully understand the nuances of positioning in the goalie spot, like exactly where they should be. But doesn't he just look better and more active and more athletic and some of the more spectacular saves? Maybe he gets himself in trouble and is out of position with some of that stuff. I'm sure that's what a goalie coach would tell you. And that's why Grubauer ends up starting more games and playing more. But geez, you watch that and he plays with so much more life, and I thought he energized the team even with some of the saves. It didn't end up leading to a win. And maybe it's just that the guy's been hurt and you haven't been able to ride him because of that. So, I'm willing to allow for some there's something I don't know. But, geez, from an outsider perspective, come on, Hackstall, play this guy. He sure seems like he's got a little bit more to offer.
I was listening to Nick Ismondi said something similar about his activity and the vibe he gives the rest of the players to play harder. But they also looked like in the third period they were just out of gas.
Well, they're just
not
as good.
They didn't have any answers
either.
Anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they're just not as good.
They were barely
that.
Hanging on the first two, it kind of felt like, and then the third got away.
Yep, that's sort of, and then they can't put the puck in the net even with a 6-on-4 advantage at the end. So frustrating, but it's a minor, maybe it's not a minor thing, maybe it's a major thing. You watch that game, and I see a guy in Driedger, all right, give him a shot.
We did think that was going to be their goalie until they were like, oh, wow, we can get Grubauer too.
Right.
So we thought at that point it would be kind of a split, and maybe it's just been injuries that have kept them from being able to do that. So I'm not just crushing Hackstall here. But at this point, if it's not injury, let's go. Get the dude in there. Let's see what he's got. Let's see if he can kind of, energize the team, spark something, steal a game for you. He nearly stole that one yesterday. He had a couple of great saves, and of the two goals he gave up, one came off a deflection, wasn't his fault, and the other one he made a great save right beforehand. There are just too many players in front of the net because defense not doing the job. So
you're paying Grubauer a lot, right?
They're paying him a fair amount. Yeah, I mean, they're paying him to be at least a top goalie. And
he's not.
No, not playing that way. All right, that is everything you need to know. We'll be doing that 7:15 every hour throughout the morning. Brock Heward will be here today. G. Scott will be here at 8 o'clock. That should be interesting. We'll see what's on G's mind and what he's fired up about today. I do want to see if we can address what the heck is going on in the big Jody Allen meeting. And maybe it's still going on, as Morris suggested earlier. Maybe they met throughout the night, kind of a sleepover at Jody's house. I don't know. Everybody brings their sleeping bags. And you guys camp out over here. You
beanbag
guys
can... chairs and love sacks. And stuff.
Exactly.
Great.
All right. Well, we'll see if we can find out what the details are. In the meantime, buzz around the station. A bunch of things I heard over the course of the last couple days, including something Bump told me. That's just been it's just been rattling around in the empty hole of my brain here. And I can't quite be okay with it, even though it sure seems to be the norm. So we'll buzz through that next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Happy Friday, everybody. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. I enjoy going around our station. There's so much good stuff that you hear over the course of a day, and I get to drive around a little bit, and I find myself yelling at the radio at times or, wanting to participate in conversation. It's fun. Kind of like what got me into this business to begin with, right, was just listening to sports radio growing up and wanting to reply. The person who actually helped me and really spawned my interest in getting into radio is Ryan Russillo, who some of you may have listened to or listened to his podcast, like one of the best podcasts on the internet. And Ryan just had an incredible success at ESPN and left there and is doing some writing and stuff in LA. But, you know, it was his show at a small little rinky-dink station that I used to listen to every single day. And that's what finally got me to, like, hey, I'm going to quit my job and see if I can get myself into radio. So same idea. I used to call his show sometimes and, like, see if I could get on and add to it. And so, you know, driving around or sitting at work and listening to the radio and listening to sports arguments and stuff was certainly, it's always been part of my life. So as I drive around now, I listen to our station. I hear Jake say something or Stacy say something or Bump say something or Bob or Dave or whomever. And I want to reply. I want to respond. So I like this because we get to just kind of cut a little piece of it, play it for you so you get to hear what they're saying. And then I get to have my response time, which is great. So I could have responded to this, and maybe I will with Bump when we get a chance to talk next week. But, and we were talking about Bobby Wagner earlier this week. He said something about Bobby and his relationship with the Seahawks that has just been kind of rattling around in my brain here for a couple of days. So this is what he said.
If you are trying to cut a deal or free up some more money, that is the spot you're going to go to. But Bobby's a Pro Bowler. You know what I'm saying? He's a Hall of Famer. He's earned the right to ask for premium dollar. It's really all about Bobby Wagner, because I think that they have to restructure that contract for them to really continue to build off of this nucleus. And can you convey that message to him to where it makes sense?
Any guesses what couple of words in that 25 seconds just I can't quite deal with?
Deserve?
Earned the right.
Earned the right.
Yeah. Same concept.
Yeah.
He's earned the right to respond. He's earned the I don't buy that. You earn the respect, right? Bobby has earned the respect of being treated one way versus another, and that's one of the things that has set the Seahawks apart from, I think, a lot of other organizations, is treating their players, treating their veterans especially, treating guys with respect. Right? Offering them the opportunity, that David Moore bonus a couple of years ago versus what you saw in Minnesota last week, right? Where they didn't even throw the ball to Justin Jefferson, even though they were aware of the fact that he was on the verge of breaking a record. Like those elements of respect, treating guys the right way, has always been a part of what has set the Seahawks apart since Paul Allen bought the team. And certainly Pete Carroll was the perfect person to carry that on. They treat guys with respect, and Bobby deserves that as much as anybody else. But earn the right? You don't earn the right for salaries in the NFL. You don't get paid, or at least you shouldn't, based on what you've done. You should be paid based on what you're going to do. And at this point, whatever Bobby's done, Pro Bowl nods, I don't care about any of that stuff. The goal is to win a championship, right? Not to pay Bobby Wagner what he's earned. Sorry. It's not a shot at Bobby. It's not a shot at any player. It's me rooting for the Seahawks, not for a player. And the goal is to win championships. So if Bobby's making $17 million a year and the cap hits like $24 million, and he's not worth that, he hasn't earned anything. He hasn't earned the ability to keep that money, not if the rules of the NFL allow you to cut him or to renegotiate with him to a salary that you think is appropriate. Sorry.
It doesn't go
not personal. Huh?
Like baseball, where you have all this guaranteed money and you're paying players for what they did 10 years ago.
You don't have to do that in football. Like, yeah, Bobby did earn his way up to that big contract. He got it for 2 years. He has unfortunately underperformed it, and now it's up to the Seahawks to make a decision. If there's one change I think the Seahawks should make this offseason, personnel-wise, it's probably with Bobby. You're just paying too much money for a guy that doesn't contribute in a way that a player of that salary needs to contribute. If I'm going to pay $17 million for a player, they better darn well, if they're a middle linebacker, force some fumbles. They better have some hits in the backfield. They better make some game-changing plays, not be hanging on for dear life. I need to feel their presence constantly, and I certainly can't watch Cody Barton come in as a you know, mid-round pick who hasn't played much in a couple of years and see no visible drop-off for your defense. That doesn't work. You haven't earned the right to be able to keep that job forever. So if I'm the Seahawks and I have something that I need to work on this offseason, that's probably number one. So when I hear Pete say that there may be moves coming, and we'll get into some of that sound a little bit later as well, that to me should be probably top of the list. I would expect Bobby Wagner, if he's here at all, to be at a significantly reduced salary. And honestly, and I say this without any malice towards one of the best people the Seahawks have ever employed, and one of the best players the Seahawks have ever employed. I probably at this point would just flat out move on, because I think the production you can get for $1 million a year out of Cody Barton is not that far off. Maybe it's not the same, but it's not far off of what you can get from Bobby. And what if you can go spend that money and bring in Chandler Jones? I'll just use him as an example. Would you rather have Bobby Wagner or Cody Barton and Chandler Jones? I don't even see how that's a conversation, right?
Jones is making...
I think he's 20, something like that.
15.5.
Okay, well, maybe he'd make a little more than that in an offseason. He just had another really good year. Yeah, but all right, look, I'm just using him because it's a rough guess. What would you rather have next year, Bobby Wagner or Cody Barton and Chandler Jones?
Yeah, I think Chandler Jones.
What's going to affect the game more? What's going to affect other teams more? What's going to make your defense better? I don't even think that's a question. Give me the defensive end who's going to rush the passer and a middle linebacker who at the very least wasn't a drop-off and at times looked better, looked more aggressive, looked faster in pass coverage and all of the things that the Seahawks scheme requires. I love Bobby Wagner. I support everything he's ever done for this team and this community. But if that's my choice, and I don't know that it is, I've made up that choice. It's sort of a straw man argument. I grant you that. I don't even think that's close. Give me Chandler Jones. Give me Cody Barton, and let's roll. Let's see what happens. That's for me. All right. This is from Wyman and Bob talking about this draft and how important it is.
How important is the draft coming up? That, you know, they made hay. They won that Super Bowl with a lot of really inexpensive superstars. You know, Russell and Sherman and guys that hadn't signed those huge deals at that point. You know, and that's sort of a once in a generation haul that they made with all these guys that were lower. You know, Cam was not a first round pick. KJ Wright's not a first round pick. Russell's a third round pick. Doug Baldwin's a free agent. We can go up and down the list. I mean, it was amazing what they were able to do. But since, you know, as the years have gone on, they haven't been that lucky or that good at it. And you're wondering, all right, well, we can't go out there and buy every player. There is a salary cap. As much as they do have room, they've got to sign their own free agents. So you need those young guys, the cheaper guys, to step up and be impact players at times.
This year, they have a second, a third, two fours, a fifth, and a seventh. I think that's perfect for them. This has a chance to be one of those drafts that going forward is you look back and go, wow, they hit on a lot of players.
I hope Dave's right, and I agree that it's incredibly important. I don't think it's perfect for them. I think it would be better if they had their number 10 pick. And I think Dave would probably agree with that. They have an opportunity here. It's not as bad as it sounds, and having the extra third rounder is great. They'd be better off with the number 10 pick.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you think they'd actually use it, or do you think they'd trade out?
I think they'd use it. I honestly think they'd use it. I mean, I think that a lot of the trade out has come because they haven't been in the top 10. They've been in the, you know, sort of 20 to 25 range a lot, right? Right? I mean, they've made the playoffs almost every year. Yeah, one year they didn't make it, and they were, what, like 19th or something like that? I mean, like, they haven't had too many picks in the top 10. If you go back to the early years of what they did, they used those picks, right? I mean, Earl Thomas, what was it, 6-14, I think it was, for Earl Thomas and the left tackle for Russell Okung? I think it was 6-14. I might be getting that wrong. 6-12.
Yeah, Earl Thomas was 14.
Okay, and I'm pretty sure that it was 6-14 then. I think Okung was number. It was the sixth overall pick. They used both of those.
Yep.
Right. So did I get that right?
You did.
Oh my God!
Wow. 2010.
All right. Stop the show. Stop the show. I am a golden god. No. That's amazing. I think they would use it. I think if they had the number 10 pick this year, they would go out there and try to find themselves a player that was an absolute game wrecker. Right? Somebody, a defensive player that could be a complete difference maker for them, or a franchise left tackle who could replace Duane Brown and protect the blind side of their quarterback for the next 5 to 10 years. I think if they did have that pick, or a defensive tackle who just wrecks the game from the inside out, right? Try to draft the next Aaron Donald. I mean, at the 10th pick, you can get some dudes. So I appreciate what they're saying, that yes, John Schneider has at times been better in the mid to late rounds than he has up top with, you know, Jermaine Ifedi or Carpenter or obviously Malik McDowell, or, you know, that list we LJ Collier, who right now looks like one of the worst picks they've ever made. I mean, like, you can certainly go through some of the mistakes, but those guys weren't top 10. They weren't top, they weren't even top 15. The two players the Seahawks have taken in this era in the top 15 are Russell Okung and Earl Thomas. Those guys turned out pretty well, right? One of those guys is an all-timer, and the other guy was pretty darn good during their Super Bowl run. So I disagree. I think that if they had the opportunity to pick at number 10, they would certainly be better off with that. So here's some Jake and Stacey. So more talk of the draft with Jake and Stacey.
By the way, can I just say about the Rashad Penny thing? I'm seeing a lot of people saying, like, oh, cold takes exposed, saying Rashad Penny didn't work out. Rashad Penny didn't work out for 3.5 years. What he's done in the last five games.
Yeah, hold on. That's the wrong one. That's the same one we played the other day. My bad. I was looking for them a few minutes later, but that's a good cut. We already did it, so I'm sorry. Good job, Stacey. It was a very good cut. It was a very good conversation about Rashad Penny, but we already talked about it. So let me play you some Brady Henderson from their show yesterday.
And I think Russell has an ability, and you know this, Jake, to really put his head down and to compartmentalize and to focus on the task at hand. And my understanding all along has been that, you know, he sort of put all of those concerns that he had last season on the back burner with the plan to revisit them this offseason. And so I imagine that once all of this, you know, this whole situation with Carroll and Snyder and Jody Allen, once whatever the resolution is to that, assuming that everybody remains in place, whether it's under the same sort of format or not, I imagine that Russell Wilson is going to reach out to them again, like he did last offseason, and say, hey, what is the plan? What is the plan for the offensive line? What's the plan for free agency? And I imagine that he is going to want a different kind of answer than he got, than what he got last year. And I do think that a big part of why he sounded off the way he did is that he reached out to them and said, hey, what's happening here? And he didn't get the answer that he wanted.
So what is, all right, great point from Brady, and I get some more sound from him I'll get into also. So let's say Russell Wilson next week reaches out to Jody Allen, or reaches out to whoever it is he talks to. It's probably not Jody. It's probably Pete or whomever. And says, okay, what'd you guys come up with? Maybe the meeting's still going on by then. Who knows? It's a week-long meeting. They're trying to exhaust them. They have like a shaman, and once you get tired enough, eventually you get to the great ideas. And he says, okay, so what'd you guys do? And they come back to him and say, okay, Russ, we made a couple of changes. John Schneider is now fully in charge of personnel. Pete's out of that business. Okay, we'll talk more about that in a moment. But let's say they say that. Here's hypothetical. And guess what, Russ? We're going to make a change. Ken Norton, who Dave Wyman pointed out yesterday was 19th in virtually every category, an average of 19th in every defensive category over the course of his career, he's out. We're going to bring in a new defensive coordinator with new ideas, and he's going to communicate this to the players, and they're going to have different scheme, and Carlos Dunlap or whoever your defensive end is going to actually rush the passer. It's going to be great. What does Russ say to that? Cool, let's go. You made a change to who's in charge of personnel, and you changed your DC out?
He looks down his list of six boxes and is like, nah, I don't see that as being one of those.
Are either of those even on the box? And I'm sure Russ is frustrated yesterday. I know a lot of the Pro Football Focus grades came out, and I saw Jake and some others getting pretty fired up about, what's this, Corey Linsley, right? The center from the Chargers, and the other center that they could have drafted. Like, oh my God, they missed on these two players. Instead, they had Ethan Posick. They're not wrong. I don't disagree with them. Right?
Right.
I mean, like, you can point to mistakes that this team has made, and, you know, people they drafted over others. I mean, I think you can do that for all 32 teams.
Yeah, it's pretty easy in hindsight to do all
that. Yeah, it is. But, I mean, I think those were some players that were being pointed at last year. I think Jake has a right. Like, he wanted Linsley last year, and they didn't get him. They got somebody else instead, and Linsley had a significant – he didn't give up a single sack. Didn't give up a single sack at the center spot. So I get some of the anger.
And I think you could argue that you would have been better off leaving Damian Lewis where he was playing well.
I think you could make
maybe
that.
Maybe not bringing in Gabe Jackson, who wasn't bad, but I don't know if he changed much, and getting a good center.
I think
because center is a very important position.
Not just a valid point. I think you're probably right. Right? Damian Lewis went from being an incredibly promising rookie on the right side of the line, who was one of the highest graded players on the Seahawks. Now, I don't know how much, you know, to put into Pro Football Focus, but okay. He was one of the top graded players on the Seahawks at right guard. They moved him to left guard. He stunk. He didn't have a good year. He went from being one of their highest rated players to one of their lowest in a year just by moving from right to left. Or is the coaching staff making him worse? I don't know. Maybe he's not as good a fit in Shane Waldron's system, and maybe that's the problem, but that's an issue unto itself if that's the case. Anyway, you think that's enough for Russell Wilson? if he's truly upset and has a six checklist, all a six item checklist, he hears that like they've made a slight change in personnel and a DC firing, that's going to do it. Russ wants to throw the ball. He wants an offensive coach, like Colin Cowherd said yesterday. I mean, do I have to play you this? It's only 6 seconds. I don't mind playing it again. This was Colin yesterday.
I think Russell Wilson wants a new coach and would prefer an offensive coach.
All right. Well, if that is true, a move a defensive coordinator and a change in structure at the top does not give him an offensive coach. It does not change whether or not Russell Wilson gets to throw the ball all over the yard. It doesn't help Russell earn MVPs. So I don't, as you kind of follow through how this may go, assuming Pete Carroll is not like the victim of the white smoke that Maura mentioned earlier. And now I'm imagining more like the angel of death at the end of Indiana Jones at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like it just swallows Pete up and he melts like that dude at the end. Sorry, it's a spoiler alert on Raiders of the Lost Ark if you haven't seen it
yet. Last 30 years. Sorry.
I gave you some time. If you haven't seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, guy dies at the end. I don't want to tell you. Angel of death comes out, wraps around. That's the end of things. Sorry. They find the Ark of the Covenant. I blew it. I'm sorry. That's how it goes. I don't know whether that makes Russell happy enough to change his view on any of this, but, quite frankly.
Okay, I'll buy it. What if let's say that John Schneider is now fully in charge of choosing personnel. Does Russell maybe feel that he could get more of the guys he wants because Pete's not in it?
I don't think so.
No?
If he and Pete have philosophical differences that after this long they're still butting heads on, I really don't know if any of, like you said, any of those other changes are going to make him feel different.
If what he wants is to play for a different philosophical head coach, I don't know how that's going to change as long as Pete Carroll is here. So what Russell does next and what we start to hear once, eventually some news of this meeting ends up coming out, I'm pretty darn curious to see how that goes because that's the next step. Step one here is going to be the meeting. Step two is, I guess, finding out what changes get made from the meeting. But then step three is, or however you want to look at, is Russ. How does he react? What is his counter to whatever the Seahawks do? All right, here's a little more from Brady Henderson, because I think this personnel decision, while it may not affect Russell Wilson and what he believes, I think it has a drastic effect on the Seahawks. Here's what Brady said about it.
I also have a hard time seeing the status quo possibility that what if one of the resolutions to this whole deal is that Pete Carroll ends up ceding final say on personnel decisions to John Schneider. And I think I could see that happening for a few reasons. And, that has been the deal, I think, since they started in 2010 that, Carroll has final say. I mean, they obviously work together on everything, but, when push comes to shove and if there is a disagreement on something, that Carroll does have final say. And so I think that what Jeremy threw out there could happen, and I think it would make some sense. I have a hard time seeing the logic in moving on from one of these guys when you just extended both of them within the last year and a half. But I also have a hard time seeing the status quo remain what it is. And this would be, I think, a significant change, and not just a change for change's sake. I think this would be a significant change. And I think you could look back at a number of personnel decisions they've made over the years. And I think some of those would have gone very differently had John Schneider had final say. I think the Rashad Penny over Nick Chubb decision in 2008 is one of them. I think that if John Schneider and the scouting staff had their say, I think that they would have drafted Nick Chubb.
All right, so a few things on this. One, I know this seems to be the common opinion. John Clayton said this to us this week. Brady has said it a few times. I've chatted with Brady off the air as well and kind of debated this a little bit. I don't agree. I don't think this is going to happen. Maybe I'm going to be wrong when this is all said and done. I am not basing this based on information that I've gleaned by talking to people inside the building. So this is nothing more than my opinion on it. I'll tell you honestly, I try to get as much information as I can to build my take, so to speak, on what I've learned and what I can, glean from people that I know inside the various organizations. This is not that. This is just my gut opinion. I don't think Pete's going to give that up. And I don't think they're going to, and if it does happen, I don't think it'll be public. I don't think they're going to clip Pete like that. Yeah. Just don't. I think once you do that, especially if you do it publicly, you're signaling the end.
Right. I think we said this yesterday. There's no win in that.
I don't think so.
Well, yeah. If we hear it publicly, to me, that means that then Schneider wants you to know that Pete has been hindering him, and that's not a good situation.
Well, and that's what I don't like about hearing these stories that come out about, oh, well, they would have drafted Chubb, but it was Pete. Like, those stories come from somewhere, right? Doesn't mean they come directly from John Schneider. I'm not accusing that. But they come from somewhere. They don't get made up, right? We've heard this story now a few times. And by the way, I heard Brady tell the story on the air. It was yesterday with Jake and Stacey. He was telling the story where he goes on there about Nick Chubb, about how it was Brian Schottenheimer who had been with Chubb at Georgia, and he was the one, he had some concerns, and he was the one who sort of warned them off of Nick Chubb, and that's how they ended up with Rashad Penny. All right, look at that. There's a lot, for years, that story's been kind of out there and bubbling around as, can you believe an assistant coach has so much power that he was able to dissuade them from what player personnel wanted? And that is certainly one way to look at it, and that does sound problematic. The flip side is, if Pete's sort of loosey-goosey structure where everybody gets together and they try to use as much information as they can, isn't that valuable information? A guy who coached him a couple of years earlier, don't you want that info? And if he sees something that says, no, I don't think that's the right direction to go.
Well, it turned out not to be valuable.
Maybe. Well, sure. Maybe. In hindsight, yeah. He maybe ended up being wrong, but you don't want to ask.
But if it happened the other way around.
Hey, I'm thinking about making a hire for my business, and I know somebody at my company who used to work with the person or used to manage the person that I'm thinking about hiring. Do you talk to them? And if they say, yeah, I don't know, that person was not great when I worked with them 5 years ago. Maybe they've grown since then, but these were the red flags. That's not part of your process?
No, I think it should be, but I could see where that's where the tension comes in, because Schneider might be like, well, my scouts have done their research and I'm comfortable with this. And then there's the argument on the other side. Well, Carroll's like, well, he coached him and I trust
him.
That's
a valuable piece of information. Somebody who has firsthand knowledge, not like the scouts are perfect. These are the same scouts who've made any number of other mistakes and any number of other successes. No scout is perfect.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying I could see where the tension could start.
I guess. I don't know. It's always held up as this example of how disastrous the system is, and I'm not sure it's really as bad as it seems. I don't know. I could play you the Pete loosey-goosey structure here, but we're kind of running out of time. So when I hear some of these things, by the way, the Chubb pick would have been better as we sit here 4 years later. I think Penny's more talented. I can see why. I mean, in the last five games, don't you see why they drafted Penny over Chubb? Didn't work out. Guy got hurt. Maybe he didn't have the right mentality. Maybe they weren't able to reach him in time. But you can see why they drafted him, right? I mean, it's not like cut and dry Chubb's 100% better. His career has been better.
Right.
The results have been better. But Penny's more talented. His size and speed combination. And if he had been healthy, who knows? Maybe we'd be sitting there looking and going, thank God Brian Schottenheimer spoke up, because they were going to draft this guy Chubb, who has a lower ceiling than this guy Penny, who's got an incredibly high ceiling. There's a risk-reward factor there. So I don't think Pete is going to end up losing control when it's all said and done, but we're going to find out, hopefully, eventually, one day, if this meeting ever ends. I think that we need to figure out what the heck's going on in this meeting. We'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.